budget for Monday, June 27, 2005. Open a work session on several bills, but we will start with House Bill 2450 and invite the Speaker and Senator Gordley to come, please.
I'm going to let ask Senator Gordley to start and do cleanup.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Abel Gordley, and I represent Senate District 23, which includes some wonderful neighborhoods in Northeast and Southeast Portland. And for those of you who may be strangers, come and visit sometime. Before I speak to the merits of House Bill 2450, I would like the committee to know something more about my perspective, and to hear that from me. My perspective, which stems from my career as an education activist spanning more than 25 years, going back to 1979, in fact, advocating for a quality, non-racist education for all Oregon students. I also want to say to you that I have served in this legislative assembly since 1991, 14 years, longer than any of you, I believe. And I will also tell you that I am tired of watching things not happen in this building, that I am tired of partisan obstructionism that gets in the way of us doing what is right, what is right, what is just, what is right for Oregon, and what is needed for Oregonians. And I am speaking only for myself today. As a product of Oregon schools and as an involved adult, I can tell you that our schools have historically left many children behind. I'm a native Oregonian. Our schools have left many children behind, particularly the children of the poor, children of color, and the disabled. And long before there was a program or mandate called No Child Left Behind, I was among those in the Portland community advocating for those children, that none would be left behind, that all would receive a meaningful, relevant, quality education, urban, rural, no excuses, no more excuses, no child left behind. That's where we were coming from as a community in the late 70s, as I served as a member of the Black United Front, and as a member of and as a staff member of the Urban League of Portland. Beginning in 1979, along with the Black United Front and the Urban League, I fought for disaggregated data. 1979, disaggregated data at the district level in Portland Public Schools to be used as a diagnostic tool, and then took this fight to the state level once I became a legislator, working with then Superintendent Stan Bunn to achieve this reporting requirement, and again before the federal requirement in No Child Left Behind came about. But why did it take 25 years? Just a question. Without this data, which clarifies achievement gap issues, Oregon would continue to pursue one-size-fits-all strategies that leave children behind by design. That's what we were doing. That was status quo. And I realize that as I speak to you about No Child Left Behind and my support for that, for much of what is in that federal mandate, that that's an unpopular message for many Democrats. But that's what it is. And again, my challenge to myself today is to share a perspective and to speak to you from my experience and from my heart and my mind about where we are in this legislative process. In the late 70s and early 80s in Portland, I helped organize school boycotts. We actually had to boycott the schools in order to get attention paid to the needs of our children. I also helped coordinate hundreds of volunteers, students and parents, to address issues of fiscal and multicultural accountability. I'm talking about 25 years here. These are not new issues, but they are issues that have gone long unaddressed. I coordinated a Saturday school program focusing on reading, math, and African American history and culture, a program based in several neighborhood churches. And I served for more than 5 years on the Portland Public Schools Desegregation Monitoring and Advisory Committee, also serving as vice chair of the curriculum committee. I have served as a parent coordinator for Albina Head Start. I was the author of Oregon's Multicultural Curriculum Act of 1999, which requires Oregon school districts to develop and implement a multicultural curriculum policy. How many of our school districts around the state have a policy and a curriculum in place? For the past decade, I have led the statewide effort to improve and enhance the quality of public and private teacher education programs to reflect the increasing diversity of Oregon and to achieve a standard of cultural competency for all educators. I support the policy of No Child Left Behind. Some of it is really offensive to me. Some of the policy is offensive to me, but right now I'm focusing on those things that are mandates that provide support for low-performing schools, particularly the mandate calling for disaggregated data, which I've addressed. What is very clear to me about No Child Left Behind and our state is that without No Child Left Behind, we would have status quo. We would have status quo, and that is unacceptable. And it's unacceptable to me, and it should be unacceptable to all of us. Until very recently, the education establishment and its leadership as we know it in Oregon, had failed Oregon's poor white students and its students of color by not providing an aggressive, no excuses leadership to close the achievement gap and to close the teaching gap. The teaching gap is connected to the achievement gap. But I am also here to say that that leadership gap is starting to close. And I'm pleased to report that these past failures of leadership are being challenged. There's a lot of reflection going on in organizations, educational organizations. We have the leadership of our state superintendent, Susan Castillo. We have leadership from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission in Vicki Chamberlain. I'm talking about a quality of leadership now here that is required. And key organizations such as the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, the Oregon School Boards Association, the Northwest Regional Laboratory, and the Oregon Education Association. I want you to know I've had some very hard discussions constructive discussions with the Oregon Educational Association about a lot of the issues I've just laid out for you around cultural competency, et cetera. Now, I'm laying out a perspective here for you, and I'm also laying out a context that I hope helps you understand how I get to support for the speaker's bill. There are education leaders in this room today, sitting on the back row, not up front, but on the back row. They are depending upon you in this process. They are depending on us in this process to find a solution that reaches beyond our current funding crisis and that addresses the future educational needs of our state. We legislators, we Oregonians, cannot solve our Oregon education funding problems, and for that matter, we cannot solve any significant Oregon problem without a comprehensive bipartisan strategy. And that is why I am here today. My support for this measure has not been bought. My support for this measure does not result from an offer to trade for something else. And I did not consider the Portland provision, which is no longer in the bill, to be blackmail. I am very much aware, as are all of you, that Portland tax dollars subsidize the rest of the state. And I hope that we all recognize and respect that as fact. I am here because I refuse to stay stuck in partisan limbo. This is a choice. This is my choice. We are meeting here today a little after 3:30 in the afternoon on the 27th of June as the 2005 Legislative Assembly draws to a close and people are starting to talk about sine die and the T-shirts are out and the coffee cups with our names are all on them and our school districts across the state are passing out pink slips to teachers as they crowd more students in the classrooms. And as the students from poor families face the summer without the school lunch program, remember the school lunch program? A program that they are depending on to keep body and soul together and to keep their mind sharp enough to receive an education. And there are students in some areas of our state who continue to have a four-day school week. 4 days. I am here to say that we legislators and all Oregonians must put our partisan differences aside and stand together for our children and for the future of our state. And I'm willing to do that. I am willing to do that. I am here to support House Bill 2450 because it offers an opportunity for this legislature to forge a comprehensive bipartisan strategy to address the funding, quality, and equity issues that plague Oregon's education system and Oregon's economy. I am here to advocate for adequate, stable funding for Oregon's full educational spectrum from pre-kindergarten programs to higher education, for workforce training, for urban-rural equity, and for the educational access for all Oregonians who want to improve the quality of their lives. I recognize in House Bill 2450 an opportunity to dedicate funding for K-12 education. I have advocated for dedicated funding for education for years, but with accountability for how the dollars get spent in the classrooms. Accountability. ESL funding comes to mind. Dollars supposedly targeted for a specific purpose that haven't always wound up being spent the way they were meant to be spent. I recognize in House Bill 2450 funding to provide technical assistance for low-performing schools across the state. This provision addresses one of the mandates of the No Child Left Behind Act, and I have long understood that achievement gaps cannot be bridged without this targeted assistance. This targeted assistance starts with our knowledge that too many of our students, particularly students of color and students from poor families, are languishing in classrooms across the state. Surely, we all read the stories and the headlines that remind us of those challenges that exist in our classrooms all across the state. According to the Oregon Progress Board's latest figures, 20% of our youngest students, those of pre-kindergarten age, do not enter school ready to learn. These students are being left behind at the very beginning of their careers, and is it any wonder that only 80% of Oregon third graders are reading at achievement level, if you accept that statistic? We must take the opportunity that lies before us today in House Bill 2450 and design a strategic, bipartisan solution that removes barriers to success in school, beginning with preparing children to be ready to learn through programs like Head Start. And I'll say right here that it's unfortunate that the measure before you doesn't deal with stability and funding for pre-K through 12 as opposed to K-12, food for thought. I recognize in House Bill 2450 a provision for funding Oregon K-12 in the 2007-2009 biennium at a level of $5.8 billion, higher than other proposals that have circulated in this session, and that offers some funding stability where we have none. I will support legislation that moves this legislative body in the direction of stability, adequacy, and equity. And I will support legislation that at long last offers to our students, our parents, and our educators stability, adequacy, and equity, some certainty. I recognize in House Bill 2450 an opportunity to begin to address statewide tax reform and restructuring. It's just another way of looking at the opportunity in front of us. Oregon needs dedicated funding for its schools. I think I've made it clear that I've long stood as an advocate for dedicating adequate and stable revenue for schools, but with accountability for how the dollars get spent. I want to take the opportunity to also say that we're talking about dedicated funding for education, but I'd be remiss as chair of the Senate Public Safety Committee if I didn't say we also need a dedicated funding source for our state police. Let's not forget that one before we sign-y-die. And Oregon needs dedicated funding to provide for its seniors and its most vulnerable citizens. But again, I recognize in House Bill 2450 an opportunity to move this 2005 Legislative Assembly to at long last act. Now, not putting it off to next session, but acting now. We cannot leave this building without completing the jobs we were elected to do. And so I am endorsing House Bill 2450, because I am willing to bridge partisanship and focus on getting something done and getting to some results. We need stability. We need adequacy. We need equity. Is it all in this package? No. Does the package need some tweaking, if you will? Yes. But let's focus. And again, I'm here to support the speaker. And I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I thank all of you for your attention to what I've had to share. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gurley. Speaker Minnis.
I want to thank the chair and the committee for their indulgence. And I think you've read some accounts in the press. There's been a lot of speculation as to why this bill is even before this body. The Speaker's a Republican. Why does she care about education? She must not care about education. She's a Republican. But you know what? Let me just rehearse for you what the state has been through in the last 4 to 6 years and where schools have gone through in the last 4 to 6 years. In 1999, we lived through 5 special sessions. The economy was tanking. We knew that we were going to have to refer something out because we were in trouble. I sat in the governor's office, along with Speaker Simmons. I was the majority leader of the House at the time. John Kitzhaber was the governor. And we had Deborah Kefauver as a minority leader from the House. And we had Senator Courtney in the Senate in that room as well. Gene Durfler was the Senate president. And the debate was over whether or not we should put K through 12 under a referred measure. And the debate was hot and heavy in that room. And we pleaded with them to not put schools under Measure 28. We pleaded with them to not go there. And we were not successful in that pleading. So Measure 28 fails, and our schools are left to cope at the end of a 2-year biennium to make the adjustments within the last 6 months of a 2-year biennium. Our economy is continuing to bottom, and we end up with Measure 30. Nobody thought that Measure 30 would be referred, but I think they underestimated the anger of the voters. Once again, our schools were harmed. I was sitting in my office this session in March. I've watched Vicki Phillips, and she is the superintendent of Portland Public Schools, and I've watched her come into the state, and she's come into Portland Public Schools, and she has made some tough calls. Very, very difficult decisions. It took some tough stands, and I think the Portland Public School Board has taken some very tough stands and made some very difficult choices. I'm sitting in my office at 5 o'clock. I'm watching the news. I'm watching Vicki Phillips announce they're having to close a school. I've been in the building for 20 years, not as a member, a staff, or a good portion of that, and I said enough. I've watched education funding become a political football in this process. It's a bidding war. Who can outbid the other? Because if you give more for K through 12, you must support kids. And if you suggest less, you must not care about the kids of our state. You're just a heartless bureaucrat. So I've watched the rhetoric. I've watched the debate. And I sat in my office that day and I said, it's enough. I called Paul Warner in my office. And I said, Paul, if we're going to do this, how do we do it? If we can take funding and dedicate it, how do we go about getting there? He suggested 3 things. He said one is a property tax, but that would take a vote of the people. And they're not real inclined right now to raise their taxes. He said then you could maybe cobble together a tax here or a tax there. But frankly, Madam Speaker, we couldn't cobble enough taxes, small taxes together, to support such a large piece for education funding. That budget's largest budget we pass. Thirdly, he said, the income tax, which is the most stable. And he said you could take a portion of that and dedicate it. And that's how this began. My motive, ladies and gentlemen, was to help our kids and stop the madness of how we educate our kids and how we fund their schools in this state. I was paid a visit by the lobbyist from Portland Public Schools who explained to me that their local option was going to be gone who then explained to me that the ITAX was going to be gone and that this provision was going away. They suggested to me that this provision be away, would not take away from other schools in this state, that would provide a sunset that exists and stretch it out for some period of time, but would help them get through the next few years. My caucus supports this plan. And I thought if we put the Portland piece in there, and though it was even articulated that this is a fair trade, let's help Portland, let's bring some stability and predictability into how we fund education in this state. Unfortunately, when it came time to move the bill, some of those members believed that that was considered a tax increase. It's not a tax increase, it's a vote on a sunset. We had 30 votes, ladies and gentlemen. I couldn't get one Democrat, not one Democrat, to come across the aisle and help us. So I sit here today, and regrettably, we're going to have to strip out the Portland provision in order to move this legislation through. So I don't know what happens on the other side. I believe this is a good plan. I've been called all kinds of names for moving it, but I understand that's a political process. I didn't blackmail anybody. I wasn't being cynical. Wasn't even being political. I believe this is the right thing to do. I think our school boards and school administrators and board deserve to be able to look out for the next 4 to 6 years, 8 years, 10 years down the road and be able to anticipate a certain stream of revenue. We provide provisions in the bill and try to accommodate folks. They said 50% isn't enough. You need to make some adjustments. So we moved it up. They said 8% isn't enough. So we made some adjustments. We moved it to 9%. We put in a 4-year look-back provision and asked the legislature to come back and make adjustments where you need to make adjustments. We started at 5318 because that is the recommended number that came out of the governor's work group on education. We made all of those concessions within the bill. I had a work group that worked together on the bill to come to some sort of consensus. So we have tried to work collaboratively on this piece. So today, this committee will remove a provision in the bill that will help bring some badly needed help to Portland Public Schools. It'll go to the floor, and it'll pass. And that's where we're at. I think it's regrettable. I would have liked to have rural communities of this state, we've only stepped 30 rural legislators, were willing to come to the plate, step up, and take a vote. And believe me, they got some heat at home. Because what are you helping Portland for? Because they believe that was a good trade-off. Because if they could bring some stability and predictability and take the politics of how we educate our children, they were willing to make the trade-off. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen. We are going to move the bill with the plan. The plan will pass. And I'm going to work with the Senate leadership and pursue this and hope that we have something in the end. So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your indulgence. I know I've taken a lot of the committee's time. I'm sorry that we couldn't get one Democrat to come alongside and make this possible. So I'm going to ask you to remove that provision within House Bill 2450 and move the bill to the floor.
Thank you very much. House Bill 2450 relating to school finance. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The Dash A15 amendments to House Bill 2450A removes a provision that would allow the Portland Public Schools to exclude certain local property taxes from equalization formula revenues for the next 5 years. I move that House Bill 2450A be amended with the Dash 15 amendments and reported out do pass as amended.
Representative Morgan recommends the bill be reported out, do pass with the A15 amendments. Discussion? Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. I just wanted to commend you women who are political opposites sometimes for coming forward and expressing your support for this. And I don't question your motives, either one of you. And I'm no stranger to voting against Republicans' ideas, and I'm no stranger to voting against Democrats' ideas either. So I understand how some of you feel. I just, for me to put my endorsement on this plan at this time, I think, Senator Gordley said we need to do the right thing. And I don't think either one of you legislators would want me to do something that I didn't think was the right thing. And in my opinion, my endorsement of this plan right now would be putting us in a situation where we would tie the hands of future legislatures. For example, and the tweaking part, I just want to speak to that specifically. And these are just some ideas I'm throwing out there. I've already been told by people that some think they're not sustainable, but I think it would go a long way in creating a stability that some people might be able to support, a stability fund. The 51%, and I know what the response is going to be, but I'm not asking for a response. If it was closer to 53-54%, it was 110% every biennium we could budget up to. And if you started closer to $5.4 billion, and as far as the look back goes, if you got rid of the three-fifths majority and it was a simple majority, I think you'd go a long way in maybe getting some Democrats to cross the aisle on something of this nature. Or creating a ceiling, and I'm tying that we would be tying the hands of future legislators. And in my opinion, I really honestly believe, because it's very difficult, Madam Speaker, to get three-fifths majority on anything, especially something politically charged like this, unless the majority has three-fifths of the people and they do all vote in a block. But I once again commend you for coming here together. I like to see people of diverse political leanings working together. I think we don't have enough in that building. But for the reasons stated, I'm just not going to be able to support this plan today. But thank you for coming.
Representative Obakia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too want to thank you both for your heartfelt comments about schools in Oregon. There's absolutely no question in my mind of your love for children and your love for families. I want to make a comment regarding at least the implicit comments of partisanship regarding this bill. As one of the Democrats that does not support the bill, it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that it's being sponsored by a Republican and I am a Democrat. This is a battle of ideas or philosophies about the management of public education. It has absolutely nothing to do with partisanship. With respect to the inclusion of the Portland piece, that may be a good piece, it may not be a good piece. Had absolutely no bearing on my decision to vote yes or no. I had already made up my mind about House Bill 2450 before the Portland piece was included. And I would suggest that if there are 30 rural legislators that would like to help out Portland, that when this gets stripped out of this bill, put it into another bill and send it to the floor. And if Portland needs the help, and if they're entitled to the help, then let's give Portland a straight-up vote, yes or no, on whether this legislative body wants to help them. And then let's have a straight-up vote on whether or not House Bill 2450 is the best way for us to manage the difficulty that our schools are facing. Two very good issues, two different issues, both very appropriately in different bills before this body. And I would hope this body would do the right thing on both. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My background on this issue goes back to 69 when I was married for 25 years to a woman that taught at Ockley Green and at Humboldt schools. The issues of every student in Portland being able to achieve their ultimate potential has been an incredibly strong value in my life since going back at least to then. I sent my son to a neighborhood school, Jefferson High School, because I thought that every child should be able to get their best education at the school that's closest to them, regardless. The vote not to support $15 million of additional funding for 5 years for Portland was an incredibly difficult choice for me to make. It wasn't made in the spirit of partisanship. It was made from the basis of stability, equity, and adequacy. And I felt that that amount, the five-year sunset on it, was not stability. And the total amount was not adequate. So I think we can always agree or disagree on levels like that. But I think we're all coming from the same point of wanting to do the best thing and the right thing. And I applaud you for trying to get it out of the political quagmire. But at the same time, I think by phrasing it in terms of whether or not one Democrat is willing to cross over to support it in the House or not, puts it back in that political arena. And I'm afraid that's unfortunate. And it's unfortunate if our motivation for support or non-support is coached in those terms. But hopefully, if this goes to the Senate, I hope it can be more than tweaked, and maybe we'll all learn from this experience and grow from it. And when it comes back in an improved form, I'll be happy to support it.
Objections to the motion?
Back in effect.
We'll do a roll call.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, to clarify, you're talking about the motion to pull out the Portland piece?
No, I'm talking about A15.
Which, just to clarify the record, does not include.
Point of order. Do you want to have a sub-motion amending the bill to pull this out and then a final motion? Are you joining together the motion to amend the bill and move it out at the same time?
Let me restate the motion. The motion is that I move that House Bill 2450 be amended with the -15 amendments and reported out due pass as amended.
Representative Smith.
Very quickly, I just want to put on the record, I want to thank the City of Portland for their financial support of our small rural schools. I know in this difficult financial time, they don't have the resources to give up, to send to Salem, that we get redirected out to rural Oregon. And I think we're missing an opportunity to assist them. And so, and unfortunately, this is the direction we're going. And I think it's going to have consequences for the Portland School District. And just want them to know how much we appreciate their support.
Thanks. Again, to state, the A15s are to be amended into 2450, and that the bill be passed out with a due pass recommendation as amended. So let's call the roll. Yes, Madam Speaker. We'll stand in at ease for a few moments. And roll call vote, please.
Representative Avakian?
No.
Representative Boone?
Well, yes, and I'm going to reserve the right to vote no on the floor when it comes to the floor.
Representative Hanna?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Morgan?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Wisner?
Aye.
Chair Scott?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. Okay, thank you. House Bill 5137, Real Estate Agencies. Representative Bakken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 5137 is the budget bill for the Real Estate Agency. The General Government Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee approved a budget of $3.87 million in other funds and 18.52 full-time equivalent positions, which reflects a 15-month operating budget. During the public hearing before the Joint Subcommittee, members discussed whether the current structure and management of the agency and the Real Estate Board were appropriate and meeting the needs of the industry and the public. Legislative leadership has agreed to appoint a work group consisting of four legislative members, two members from the Real Estate Board, the Real Estate Commissioner, and one licensee. The work group will review the role and function of the Real Estate Board, practices by the agency, and alternative forms of licensure and regulation. By September 2006, the work group will report to the Emergency Board and appropriate interim committees on its findings. The General Government and Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5137 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Representative Avakian recommends the bill be reported out due pass the dash one amendments. Discussion? Objections? Without objection, motion carries. House Bill 2107A, relating to driving privileges. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2107A brings Oregon into compliance with the Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act of 1999 and the USA Patriot Act of 2001. The measure changes requirements relating to school bus operation, hazardous material driver's license endorsements, and provisions relating to commercial driver's licenses dealing with disqualification from holding a commercial driver's license. The measure was referred from the House Transportation Committee with a due pass recommendation. The House General Government Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee reviewed the fiscal impact statement and determined that the costs were within the scope of the Oregon Department of Transportation budget approved by the House and Senate. The House General Government Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2107A be reported out due pass.
Representative Morgan recommends the bill be reported out due pass. Discussion? Objections? Without objection, so ordered. House Bill 5142, Department of Education. Representative Morgan.
House Bill 5142 is the budget bill for the Department of Education Central Operations, Special Schools for the Deaf and Blind, Youth Corrections Education Program, Grant and Aid Support to Local Programs, and Debt Service on Education Lottery Bonds. The department is the lead implementation agency for the state constitutional mandate to provide by law for the establishment of a uniform and general system of common schools. The Subcommittee on Education and Natural Resources approved a total budget of $1.3 billion and 441 FTE. The budget is a 6% decrease from the governor's budget, primarily due to the Subcommittee's adjustment to federal funds expenditure limitation to bring it in line with recent federal revenue estimates. The budget is a 5.9% increase over the 03-05 legislatively approved level. This change also is primarily due to federal funds, which, despite the reduction from the governor's budget, grow by 8% from 03-05. The subcommittee reduced the department's budget for the lower PERS and attorney general rates. The subcommittee also made an unspecified reduction of $3 million general fund, or about 8%, in the department's general operations budget. It removed $1.8 million general fund policy package for an removed a $1.8 million general fund policy package for an integrated pre-K to 12 data system and $4.9 million general fund for caseload growth in the early intervention, early childhood special education program, but established these as special purpose appropriations in the emergency fund pending reports from the department to the emergency board. The subcommittee added $6 million in general fund to the department's grant and aid budget for the Oregon pre-kindergarten program. This increased increases the percentage of eligible children served in 05-07 by about 2% over the percentage served on the governor's budget for the program. The subcommittee also restored general fund support for the Student Leadership Centers and the Frontier Learning Network, both of which had been eliminated in the governor's budget. The subcommittee adopted budget notes regarding a status report on the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Education Program, funding option for the Youth Corrections Education Program, a cost-effectiveness review of combining the special schools into one campus, and the use of funds provided through the state school fund distribution formula for English language learners. Finally, the subcommittee directed the agency to present its finalized performance measures as well as 2006 and 2007 targets for the measures to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. I think this is the longest pony I've ever met. The Subcommittee on Education and Natural Resources recommends House Bill 5142 be amended and reported out do pass as amended.
Representative Morgan recommends the bill be reported out do pass with the dash two amendments. Discussion? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel kind of guilty after that long of a pony to ask the carrier a question. But what is the what are the conditions on the special appropriation to the emergency board health? What conditions have to be met to access for this?
On the are you speaking with reference to the early childhood program?
$4.9 million.
Ascertaining the caseload levels to make sure that there really is the caseloads that would release the money. This is, I think, the third biennium that the same budget note has been in this budget.
Objections?
Objection.
Oh, wait a minute. Discussion, yes.
Well, I guess I'll ask you a question too then. This is this $3 million cut to Head Start. Is that part of what you just said?
The budget that we're passing out today restores, where are we here? $6 million general fund over the governor's budget into the pre-K program.
And how much is the total? Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, sure.
Restores it, the $6 million cut from the governor's budget, but what was the 3%, the $3 million?
The $3 million was an unspecified reduction.
Is that from Head Start? It's not.
And all the other areas of the budget as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ibaki.
And I appreciate the explanation regarding the Head Start money. However, even with that, we are not allowing every child who is eligible in Oregon for Head Start to participate in that program. And in my opinion, at least, it is one of the most important programs for not only achieving healthy families and healthy children, but also getting them reading earlier, getting them one leg up in their first year in school, and also decreasing the public assistance and corrections, the juvenile delinquency rates that we see later for kids who don't have that kind of exposure. And for that reason, will have to be a no vote on the bill. We currently have another bill that allows for 100% eligible for Head Start that isn't incorporated into this. With that addition, I would have been a happy yes vote.
Some comments? Discussions? Objections?
And my objection is just, I'll butt in here, just that Head Start. I can't do it without more on that.
Okay, thank you. Let the records reflect that Representative Boone, Abakian, and Shoffler object. Motion carries. House Bill 2130A, relating to waters of this state. Representative Morgan.
House Bill 2130A would require persons operating a suction dredge having a suction hose with an inside diameter of 8 inches or less to pay permit fees to the Department of Environmental Quality. This type of dredge is typically used by a small-scale placer mining operator. The department currently has authority by rule to charge fees to suction dredge operators, but compliance has been spotty, partly due to the confusing array of fees. The bill would simplify required fees and set them in statute. The bill proposes a one-time application fee of $300 and an annual renewal fee of $25 for an individual permit and a $25 annual fee for a general permit. According to the department, the majority of dredge operators would qualify for the $25 annual permit. An estimated additional biennial other funds revenue to the department would be $73,100. The subcommittee recommends that House Bill 2130A be reported out, do pass.
Representative Morgan recommends the bill be reported out, do pass. Discussion? Objections?
I object, Mr. Chair.
Let the record reflect Representative Schaffler objects. With that, motion carries. House Bill 2265A relating to Department of State Lands. This is Representative Morgan's day.
Coming to an end.
Okay.
House Bill 2265A, as amended, makes a minor technical change to statute to clarify how submerged and submersible lands are treated for certain easement purposes. This needed fix was recognized during the 2003 session, but was not accomplished in Senate Bill 82 as intended. The bill has no fiscal impact. The subcommittee recommends that House Bill 2265A be amended and reported out, do pass as amended.
Representative Morgan recommends the bill be reported out, do pass with the dash 5 amendments. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill originally started out as a fee bill. I think there were fees that were probably necessary to the continued operation at full capacity of DSL. I just wanted to put that on the record. I think we are maybe causing some problems for the agency in the long run, but I'm not going to be opposing it here, although I may have on the floor.
Okay. Objections? Without objection, motion carries. House Bill 3124A relating to courts. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3124A is related to court filing fees and surcharges. This measure delays the effective date of the approximate 10% base filing fee increase authorized by Chapter 737 Oregon Laws 2003 from July 1, 2005 to July 1, 2007. And extends the temporary fees or the surcharges authorized by Chapter 737, Oregon Laws 2003, that was originally to sunset on June 30, 2005, to December 31, 2006. The revenues are deposited into the State General Fund after the deduction of an Oregon Judicial Department administration and collection prorate. The directing of revenue to the general fund differs from the 2003-2005 biennium when the revenue generated from the 30% filing fee surcharge was deposited to the ODJ operating account. The collection of filing fees and surcharges under this measure applies only to the state's circuit and appellate courts. Of additional note, this measure includes the provision of House Bill 2304, which raises fees charged by circuit courts for issuance of either a writ of execution or garnishment. The fee for each would raise from $4 to $7. The subcommittee recommends House Bill 3124A be amended and reported out due pass as amended. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Representative Hansen recommends the bill be reported out, do pass with the A3 amendments. Discussion? Objections? Without objection, motion carries. That concludes our agenda. We will,
Chair, request permission to vote on House Bill 2450 when we are in recess. I stepped down the hall for a moment.
Yeah, we don't do that.
Okay.
With the agenda being completed, we will adjourn.